Welcome to the full Tracy Money audio commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 2:22 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is October 26th. I thought we'd kick off with the S&P 500 because it has pushed on to new all-time highs over the course of the last 2 days. And one of the defining characteristics of this trend up since November of last year has been that there's been a clear upward bias, no question there. And there's been a well-defined sequence of ranges, one above another. And that was challenged a bit in September and early October, but then we've had this very significant rebound. But then one of the other big things about this trend is that breakouts to new highs have not been sustained, and they've generally pulled back down into the underlying range, and that's been particularly true since about May. In fact, between November and the big breakout in April, then the highs hadn't been sustained either. So there was really only one instance in this year, or the last 12 months, where breakouts have been sustained. On each of the other occasions, we've seen a pullback shortly after a new high has been posted. So it's reasonable to anticipate that, particularly as we enter the last few days of the month, that investors are going to be looking at reweighting. And that would help to explain why we've had some strength in Treasury futures, for example, because all those portfolios that have got 60-40 weightings or 70-30 weightings, well, then they're going to be rebalancing. They're going to be buying some bonds to increase their weighting, and they'll be letting out some of those equities. So when, for example, we look at positive performances right across the board for a lot of the very, very large cap companies, well, they're not holding on to the advance in an especially impressive manner. So Apple, for example, is not up all that much. It's still in positive territory for the day, but certainly it could be more impressive on the upside. Google was also among the better performers in here today. And it's also starting to ebb as we enter the last hour of trading. So we've certainly seen a rebound, and there's enthusiasm about earnings, and not least because of the big pop on the upside we saw yesterday from Tesla and then from Nvidia in here today, where the share was up in the order of about 7%. But even here, we're starting to see that the advance is ebbing somewhat. So I don't think it's at all beyond the bounds of possibility that we get some pause and consolidation heading in towards the end of the month. And because of those big portfolio reweights towards the end of the month, then we're likely to start to see demand starting to come back in the first few days of next month. And that would be very close to the pattern of trading activity that we've seen over the last few months. Now, it was certainly questioned, this propensity to have a sell-off in the middle of the month and then to have a significant rebound into the beginning of the month. Well, that was certainly tested in September, October, and we had a bit more volatility, and yet even with that a bit more volatility, we didn't get more than a 5% correction overall. So in anyone's book, that doesn't qualify as more than just a little pause of consolidation. But we are in a very interest rate sensitive environment, and when we think about the 5-year yield, it's pushing higher, and it was again higher in here today, up at 1.18%. It's clearly sustaining this breakout from what was a well-defined range. We have a somewhat overbought or overextension relative to the trend mean, so we may get some consolidation eventually, but the higher these yields go, well, then that's going to start putting pressure on the US government to continue to expand their spending, or I should say their borrowing, to cover their spending. And of course, that's going to become a front and center news story as we go through November, as they're going to have to come back and start talking about the debt ceiling yet again. Of course, nobody really believes that it's going to amount to a default. But nonetheless, It's going to continue to put pressure on their the cost of servicing the debt, the higher this 5-year yield goes. And so far, there's not a lot to suggest that this trend isn't still intact. In the semiconductors sector, Intel in particular is really starting to be under pressure. Every single time it has looked like it was going to rally and recover, it's failed. And now it's starting to come back down again towards the lower side of the range. And that contrasts really quite sharply with the success that Nvidia has had. So Intel has been behind the curve in terms of its anticipation of what market forces would be like, and they're going to have to spend a lot of time and money to get on the right side of the trend, which would suggest that there's ample scope for future volatility, and most particularly until they actually show us some results that suggest they are in fact being successful. Well, with a little bit of I think repositioning, that's also weighed a little bit on gold in here today, and it was down about $13. But unlike the stock markets, which were off their highs, gold is closing out the day off its lows, and this doesn't look like anything other than a little pause. We've had 4 or 5 days on the upside, and most importantly, the price is still coming back towards the sequence of lower rally highs. And generally speaking, when a triangular pattern has been concluded, we tend to get dynamic moves. So I think it is important to at least be prepared for the potential outcome that gold is going to surprise on the upside, and that it could happen any day. Obviously, today wasn't the day, and obviously, if we get some upside follow-through tomorrow, well, then that would certainly help to, I think, reconfirm that we are coming towards the end of this corrective phase. But the much bigger picture is that gold has been going sideways for about 15 months. One of the clear hallmarks of the big bull trend up from the lows in the early 2000s, well, in fact, in 1999, was that gold was prone to 18-month consolidations. So it's not at all unusual that gold might go sideways and have a very volatile trading period after an acceleration, and that it could last for well in excess of a year. And that's certainly what it's been doing recently. Then we can also think about the oil price, because the price of oil, it increases the cost of producing just about everything. And oil prices are up to $86. They continue to march higher in a modest manner on a daily basis, but those modest moves, they add up. So it's now pushing on to, I think, exceed the peaks, and that's certainly on a closing basis that we saw back in 2018. And we can hear from, for example, Russia and Vladimir Putin and Gazprom, where they're saying that they would like to see natural gas prices come down by about 50%. They don't want to see demand destruction because of high prices. And obviously, that's a very considerable problem in Europe. It also has the real possibility that it's going to eat into growth in Europe, and that Europe is going to have a more difficult time recovering overall, and not least because the forecast is heading towards colder weather. But the much bigger issue with regard to the oil sector, it's not so much that they need to go out and find new oil. Everybody knows where the oil is. It's just that nobody wants to be blamed for going out and drilling in it. So certainly we can think about the shales in Texas and in other regions of the USA, and those wildcatters and independent drillers, they're going to be looking for finance, and they're certainly going to get it if they can lock in prices that are profitable. And there's a well-oiled machine of financing ready to provide them with capital in the event that they can lock in at profitable prices. So that should help to ameliorate the situation for North America. But ultimately, as we look around the world, then the majors are slashing their exploration budgets, and OPEC is gaining more power as a producer of, or at least the marginal producer of record. And that generally contributes to higher prices when most of the rest of the world is tying itself in knots trying to abide by climate regulations, and certainly they're not willing to do anything ahead of the COP confab coming up over the next few weeks. So that's likely to continue to put upward pressure on the oil price. And the higher the oil price goes, well, then that's obviously going to have or take a toll on consumers. It's going to feed through into inflationary pressures. Natural gas prices were a little softer in here today. They're pausing around the highs from back in 2014. And so far, this has been a very steady consolidation overall. If natural gas prices clear the $6 level, well, then that's a base formation completion. So, some consolidation here that would unwind the short-term overbought condition that would only increase the potential that it's eventually going to pop on the upside. So then, of course, when we think about gold shares, they have the potential benefit of a breakout on gold, which should be positive. Of course, then they also have rising costs of production because of the high oil price. So therefore, in order for gold shares to offer leverage to the gold price, then gold prices have to rise faster than oil. And that's not beyond the bounds of possibility. And not least because oil prices have already been rallying for a while and gold hasn't gone anywhere for a year. So that would suggest that gold shares have the potential to offer leverage to the gold price on this occasion. And we are still in a benign environment overall for stocks. And the Euro Stoxx index closed at a new high in here today. And it's establishing itself now above the 450 level. So that's the upper side of the base formation. And it's completing a 21-year range. So we would have to conclude that European stocks are back in a bull market and that we can anticipate that the surprises are likely to be on the upside. And the FTSE 100 is the components of the FTSE 100 are a big part of that index, and the FTSE is now pushing up and out of this range that's been forming for most of the last 6 months. We have the UK budget tomorrow. And Rishi Sunak is going to, at least there's talk that they're going to remove the cap on public sector pay rises. So, in other words, they're going to raise pay for public sector workers. And that's certainly a nod to the inflationary pressures. Of course, it's taking a little bit of the wind out of the advance we've seen in the pound, and certainly the UK doesn't particularly want to have the strongest currency in the world, and most particularly, they don't want to have a significantly stronger currency than the euro. So the pound is right at the upper side of its range relative to the euro, and Europe is a lot less vocal about trying to pay for the fiscal excesses than the UK is. There's been some genuine discussion in the UK about the need to pay for and the need to get back to normal fiscal spending. So, how the budget is going to be structured is likely to have an impact on how the outlook for the pound is viewed. And there is, of course, the other point that the duration on UK debt is well in excess of a decade. So they don't have the same kind of duration risk or interest rate risk that the USA does, because the duration of the debt is more than double what it is in the USA. Nonetheless, the UK gilt has been rallying, and it looks like a base formation completion. In fact, it looks like an inverse head and shoulders base formation completion. And that would suggest that there is still potential for additional upside. And we're still in an inflationary environment overall. And we're going to, it's, and we're at the point now, and this was a something, or there was a point I made at the talk I gave to the AAPTA, and I am still waiting on them to provide a video. But the one of the points I was making was that a lot of the big technology stories that have really been animating interest in the technology sector from the perspective of investors, things like autonomous vehicles and hydrogen, drone swarms, and the infusion energy, for example. Well, those have previously been considered as nice to haves, but in order to I think accelerate the trend of deflation coming through from technology, well, those aren't nice to haves any longer. They're necessary components of this argument that technology can continue to exert a deflationary force on the economy. And I think it's arguable whether the timelines for the delivery of these kinds of pieces of technology is going to match up perfectly with the rising inflationary pressures that we have all over the world. One thing that I think is rather interesting right now is that India had been pulling back in a very mild manner over the last 5 days, and now it's starting to steady again. And the Vietnamese index, which is another big beneficiary of offshoring, is right in the region of its peaks. The other big market that's likely to benefit from reshoring is Mexico, and the Mexican index is also firming from its most recent range, and the Mexican peso remains reasonably firm as well. So it's been very inert all of this year, and continuing to pause around the 20 level. So we're in this rather interesting environment where no country wants a strong currency, but some need a weaker currency more than others. And right now we don't have big moves, and we've definitely seen that with the willingness of Australia and New Zealand to raise interest rates. Well, then that is supporting their currencies in the short term. And the problem with looking at the dollar index is that it's mostly euro dollar. And I do favor looking at the Bloomberg dollar index. It's just got more currencies in it. But it is still holding this break above the trend mean. And as long as it's doing that, well, then the dollar is not the weakest currency in the world. And that, of course, also helps to support the stock market. So we're at an interesting juncture because inflationary pressures are rising. Central banks are beginning to act, but they're very cautious. And the Federal Reserve, in particular, is in a bind because of the cost of servicing the debt rising because of the short duration of all that debt. So one of the reasons why they've had a short duration on the debt is because they've been thinking about how they could eventually cancel it and withdraw some of that excess liquidity. Of course, that is probably something they're going to be in a very difficult position if they ever try to do that. And they remain extremely sensitive to the flows hitting the stock market. There is this interesting development occurring in China Evergrande, where the CEO and owner, or a majority owner of the company, is being told that he needs to fess up his personal funds to cover some of the debts. Of course, a lot of his wealth was in China Evergrande's stock, so quite whether to the extent to which that's possible is very much open to question. Of course, it does also introduce this question about the re-rating of risk in China. I think most people who would call themselves capitalists would agree with the fact that if someone makes a lot of big risks, they are entitled to participate in the rewards for taking those risks in the event that they're successful, but that they should also suffer the repercussions of taking those risks in the event that they are not successful. So we haven't had that in the Western world for a while. Now, the challenge in China is that with the clamping down on the large companies and the technology companies, well, then you don't get to participate in the potential for upside, but then you are bailed in on the downside. But we have the opposite problem in the West, where people are more than willing and able to participate in the upside, and then when there's problems, they get bailed out. So China is experimenting now with curtailing the billionaire class. One of the interesting things, of course, with Alibaba is that the share is pulling back on this news because of the re-rating of risk, but Jack Ma has been effectively neutered for a while. So they're unlikely to take away his fortune because they've already forced him to put it into a trust, and that trust is controlled by the Communist Party. So that could insulate the company from this particular risk, but that doesn't mean it's not going to sell off with the wider sector as the full repercussions of this kind of change are being priced in. And of course, then it does open up the question in terms of governance, what's going to happen when we do run into problems in the future? And some of these very large companies that employ large numbers of people, but have behaved in an egregious fashion and taken on way too much risk, should they really be bailed out? And most particularly, should their billionaire owners first have to supply their own money? Well, then it gets into a very big legal question, and perhaps nobody really wants to answer that question right now. But certainly, we're seeing these questions about governance beginning to be addressed between the different approaches to markets that we see between the Western world and China. And of course, ultimately, it's about control, and it's about winning in terms of capturing market share and controlling one's domestic population. And these are uncomfortable questions that are being addressed now in terms of the potential for regulation with Facebook. And Facebook pulled back again in here today, so now it is trading below the trend mean. And its valuation is among the lowest of the extremely large companies. And I do wonder whether it's not going to bounce tomorrow because it's pulled back enough and earnings have not collapsed, and rather that there's the potential for regulation. But of course, with the kind of resources that companies like Facebook have, well, then they potentially can benefit from regulation because they're best able to shape it and also to comply with the higher cost of compliance. I think perhaps the bigger challenge overall is the kind of challenge that's befallen Snap, because the changes to Apple's privacy policy means that they don't know how effective their ads are. And of course, that also applies to Facebook, which of course brings us back to the question of Apple's monopoly on the App Store. And there doesn't seem to be any real willingness to tackle that in the short term. But I think it is particularly relevant that we pay attention to some of these governance questions, because ultimately they are going to frame how the market unfolds and potentially where some of those opportunities will reside. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.